Meditation and discovery of the self is so vitally important. In contradiction to the acquisition of knowledge of outside objects, because this is something which I can know, whereas the outside world I can go on analyzing, I can go on discovering for centuries and millions of years and may not arrive at the ultimate. The self, it is possible. It is there with me. I am it all the time. And what is more interesting, we discover, or at least on the basis of the discoveries of the ancient sages and yogis, we know that what is in the farthest star is in me. There is fundamentally no difference at all between me, whatever that means, whatever this means, whatever this me means. There is absolutely no difference between me and whatever exists in the farthest star. And so I turn my gaze within and ask, what am I? If I know what I am, I know the entire universe. This is what the sages of India declared boldly. It's a beautiful thing. One doesn't grasp the full significance of this, of these statements. I'll tell you a small story which occurs in one of the scriptures called the Upanishads. A young man had come of age, and it was imperative in those days that however learned, wise and enlightened you are, your son must be entrusted to the care of another wise man for his education. A father never educated his own son. And so a young man had come of age, his father sent him to a renowned teacher. This man went there, spent a few years, and all that he acquired during that period was a swollen head. What he knew, what he did not know was of no consequence at all, but he had a terribly swollen head. That is what happens to everybody now. I have a diploma and that means I am superior to you. I am superior to everybody. My father, my grandfather, anybody. What do they know? I have a diploma. That sort of thing. The father was probably sitting in the garden outside his house. The young man was trotting in like a mad horse. Wouldn't even bend. Hello, daddy. That sort of thing. And the wise old man said, aha, it looks as though you have returned from the master's house, you know, with something. Oh, yes! You know the diploma? Yeah. He said, aha, sit down. Ah. Did you learn from your master something extraordinary? And this extraordinary something is knowing which you know everything else. And the young man said, is there such a thing, knowing which I know everything else? What is that? And he said, yeah. As we are coming up against these problems, we think only nowadays, student rebellion. It was there even in those days. This young man tells his father, my teacher didn't teach me that. Probably he did not know if there was such a thing. I doubt if there is such a thing. But if there is such a thing, then probably even my teacher doesn't know. If I am a fool, the fault is the teacher's.
So I said.
And he said, what is that? He said, I can explain it to you quite simply, says the father. I can explain it to you in very simple language. You know, supposing you know what mud, earth, is composed of. You know all the pottery that earth can be turned into. If you know the nature of this earth, one clod of earth, you know the nature of all the things made of earth. If you know what gold is, you know all the ornaments that are made of gold, and also the potentialities of gold and what all it can be made into. Ah, that's it. Like that, if you know this, you know everything else. He said, I don't know. Now, the bubble had been pricked. This young man's vanity had been pricked. And so he sat down and said, sir, now tell me. You tell me. My teacher didn't say what it was. If you know, please, you tell me. Then he said, that is the self. If you know yourself, you know everything else. If I know what I am, then I know everything in the universe. Because everything in the universe is composed of exactly the same substance. If there is a substance, or spirit, if that is a spirit. And then he goes on describing what this self-knowledge in effect is. It's one of the most thrilling passages in the Upanishads. I'll give you one example. It's a long chapter. I'll give you just one example. The father tells the son, they are sitting under what is known as a banyan tree. A banyan tree is a huge thing. And it has berries, small berries. He said, my son, go and get one of those berries. The young boy picks up, here you are. He says, break that. And he breaks one of those things. It looks like a fig inside, a tiny fig inside, but with seeds. What do you see inside? He said, oh, hundreds of seeds. Can you isolate one of them? He said, of course. What do you think? I've got very sharp eyesight. I'm a young man, not old like you. Of course I can. Take it out. Here you are. What is that? One seed. It is smaller than mustard. Break that. I don't know how he broke that. You must ask the Upanishad, not me. It's so tiny that without an instrument it is difficult to pare it or break it. Anyhow, the scripture says he broke it. And he says, what do you see inside? What do I see inside? Inside what? There is nothing. There is nothing, he said. It is from that this big tree has come. It's a thrilling, if you enter into the spirit of the inquiry, it is a thrilling discovery. What you call nothing, what you see and describe as nothing, that is the seed. which probably contains the complete picture of the full-grown tree. You can transplant the analogy to the human kingdom instead of the plant kingdom. What exactly were you and I on the day of conception? You wouldn't have been able to see me. Probably a microscopic cell. Just one little cell, one little ovum fertilized by an invisible sperm. And yet, what is it? What is it? That thing contained the picture of what I am today and what I will be 10 years later if I am alive. It contained the entire figure and all the potentialities. That tiny little thing. Now the biologists are coming very close, biochemists, they are coming very close to this discovery, and they say this is not the statement of a philosopher but of a scientist. They say the more you break these cells and these atoms, the world that is contained in these atoms and cells is so wondrous that it keeps you baffled. We are unable to see quite a lot of things. We are unable to see X-rays, we are unable to see ultraviolet rays, we are unable to see all sorts of things. Our sight, or what the philosopher calls the empirical knowledge, is very limited. It's useless. So it is that is the truth. In that manner of speaking, what am I? If I know what I am, I know the entire universe. For the entire universe is exactly the same as what I am. Says Krishna in the Gita. Bhumirapo nalo vayuhu kham mano buddhirevacha ahankara iti yamme bhinna prakritirashtata apareyam itastvanyam prakritim vidhime param jiva bhutam mahabaho yetam dharite jagat. It's a statement ready made and given to you. What am I? First, I see the body, whether I am the body or not, that we are not discussing now. I see the body, and the body is made of food. And food is made of earth, water, heat, air. That's exactly what this body is made of. It's another shattering thought. When I was in Australia, a wonderful lady came to, she was also a psychologist of sorts, discussed this problem of reincarnation. Swami, do you believe in reincarnation? I said, don't use such big words. Make it small and bring it to my comprehension. What exactly do you mean? Do you mean that you will be born after you die? I said, no, sorry. If I am dead, I won't be born again. Naturally, isn't it? If I am dead, I will certainly not be born again. But you know what they say? I said, I know what they say, but first of all I must determine what dies. I die. In order to die, one must be born. Otherwise, one can't die, yes? So I must know when this was born. I pointed out to her and said, when was this born? Oh, she blushed. I didn't know that you shall not ask a lady how old she is. She started blushing. I said, please don't become a tomato. All that I am interested in is some date. Doesn't matter. I am not interested in your age. I am not a passport officer. So you tell me, 1st January 1970, I believe. You tell me this was born on the 1st of January 1970, I will believe it. So give me some date. She said, all right. I'll tell you. She said, something 48 years or something like that. This was born 48 years ago? She said, yes. I'm sorry, your mother must have been a mountain to deliver this. Huh? Your mother must have been a mountain to deliver this thing. She said, oh, at that time I was tiny. I wasn't so big when I was born, obviously. At that time I was so small. So, the question still remains unanswered. My question is, when was this born? I didn't ask you when were you born? When was this born? This. When was this born? Probably last week. When was this particular piece of flesh born? Probably a week ago, 10 days ago, 15 days ago. So what is this made of? Toast and tea. Huh? What is this made of? Some rice and curry or toast and tea, bananas, I don't know. So why don't you say that I am banana, I am made of banana? Nothing more than that. Even that, you see, it's something, it's a shattering conclusion. Even that which was born 50 years ago, I say this was born 50 years ago. All right, if this was not born 50 years ago, 50 years ago something smaller was born. Even that, what was that? You know, there are two types of tumors. One is called the benign tumor and one is called the malignant tumor. This is a third type of tumor. Which grew in the mother's body. A tumor that at the end of 8 months is called a baby. Till 6 months or 7 months, it's just a tumor growing in the mother's body. And how does it grow? It grows with the help of the food that the mother eats. So again the same thing, tomatoes and potatoes and the bread and cheese. So what you call this lovely beautiful body is nothing but food. And what is food made of? The same thing, earth, soil, some unmentionable things like manure, dirt, filth. That's how food grows, unfortunately. The dirtier the ground is, the garden is, the more luscious the fruits. And so that is what this is. Right from the start, but if you take a fruit or anything you like, any cereal, any vegetable, and ask yourself, what is this? It is nothing but earth, water, fire, that is heat, air, plus seed, isn't it? A germ of wheat or a banana is not only earth, water, heat and air. The seed is there. That is what gives the banana its shape. That is what gives wheat its shape and characteristics. So in the same way, in my case, I have all these, the earth element, the water, heat, air, plus there is this mysterious seed in me. That is what gave birth to me. That is what made it possible for all the food eaten by the mother after conception to develop the fetus in a particular shape. It is that seed. It is that seed that once it fertilized, it made the fetus grow in a certain way, not like a banana. Even though she went on eating banana, I didn't become like a banana. I still grew into a human baby because of the seed, the human seed. And that is what happens even now. It is that which sustains this growth and converts all the food eaten into me. And this Krishna gives in a very beautiful and simple way. In addition to this, there is a mysterious something called mind. Called mind. And the conjunction of body, mind and the seed or the spirit somehow again mysteriously brings about the feeling of I. The feeling of I or the thought of I is one of the most mysterious things. It's easy to say the I is an illusion, but it is very difficult to see that the I is an illusion. Oh, it's, every fool can say, oh no, I is only an illusion, a mental concept. Big words, small words, but useless words. I don't know if people here are familiar with cyclones. Are they? Are you familiar with cyclones? I don't know if it's the same as what you call tornadoes. Tornadoes is something which sucks up, I believe. Huh? Now anyhow, I'll give you a description of cyclone. We are familiar with cyclones in Mauritius. A cyclone has got what they call an eye, the eye of the cyclone. And then a whirlwind revolving around this eye at terrific speed. Anything that is caught on the path of the cyclone is destroyed. What is the eye of the cyclone? The eye of the cyclone is most important because it is the eye that keeps the whole thing revolving, that gives the whole thing the personality of a cyclone. And unfortunately for some of you who are ladies here, all cyclones are given female names, I don't know why. All cyclones are given feminine names. What is the eye of the cyclone? Nothing. And yet it is able to give the whole thing a personality, a destructive personality. And this nothing keeps moving, and as it moves, the whole thing whirls and moves till the eye dissolves. When the eye dissolves, there is no cyclone. The eye of the cyclone is spelt E-Y-E. I don't know. Why not I? You see, there again, there's a confusion in the English language. If you ask a young boy, right, I, he will look at you and say, what I, which I? There are two words with the same pronunciation, I. One is the first person singular pronoun and the other is this anatomical part. So probably the both eyes are same. This I is the same as that I which is nothing. However, this I, the ego, is able to gather around itself this terrific cyclone of mind, mental activity, continuously whirling, continuously churning and destroying our peace of mind, our happiness and everything. Can we look within and come face to face with this? Not theoretically, not conceptually. You see, the moment one utters the word I, the self, if you have read Buddhist literature, immediately you will remember what Buddha said. Buddha, he must have been a giant of a personality. He proved in an extremely simple manner that the I does not exist. He used the simile of a cart. Let us take, for instance, the watch, wristwatch. I may have a sentimental attachment to it, this wristwatch. So I wear it all the time. It'll get old, and I'll still wear it because sentimental value. And there is a friend, he says, Swami, it's all scratched and so on. Give it to me, I'll take this glass, throw it away, put a new one. Right? And then he says, the mechanism also is all rotten. Let us replace the machine, right? Then somebody says, let us replace the dial, right? Then somebody says, let us replace the case, right? Then what remains of the original thing? Nothing at all. But still I say, oh no, this watch, oh, so-and-so, my friend gave it to me. There is not a single part in that watch which my friend gave. But still there is a continuity. What do we call the watch? What is a watch? As we go on replacing, did you replace the watch at all? No. He only replaced this thing. He took this glass, threw it away. And somebody else took the dial and threw it away. Somebody else took the hands and threw them away. Somebody else took the small little wheels and springs, they threw them away. Somebody took the case and threw it away. But where was the watch? The watch is not only the putting together of all these things. No, no, no. Even if all these things are put together, it will still not be a watch. It has to be put together according to a concept. That is what makes the watch a watch. A watch is nothing more than an idea. In the same way, I is nothing more than an idea. This is my hand, this is my nose, this is my head. In the same way, all these things can be disintegrated without discovering the I. Probably you have a keener vision in which you are able to say, this is the mind, this is the discriminating intellect, no harm, this is life, absolute, wonderful. If you, in this manner, take everything apart, you will still not discover what the I is. That's very good. All this is conceptual. But can I come face to face with this? It's no use saying, oh, I'm not the body. Of course you're not the body. But our master used to say, make fun of such intellectual, theoretical philosophers. The man says, I'm not the body. I'm not this, I'm not that. The world does not exist. The world is an illusion. But if there is no sugar in his coffee, he is worried. The world doesn't exist at all. Except for one extra spoonful of sugar in my coffee. That won't do. We are bluffing. We are bluffing ourselves. And bluffing ourselves is total waste of time. Bluffing others is useful. It's entertainment. Bluffing others is entertainment, especially in modern language. Bluffing others is a lot of entertainment. Bluffing oneself is total waste of time. So, can I discover this I? I'm repeatedly using this word discover for a very valid reason. What does the word discover mean? To uncover. Something is covered. I want to uncover it. Why? I want to see what is inside. I want to see what is inside. Why do I want to see what is inside? Because I don't know what is inside. I don't know what is inside. Something is covered, I want to lift it. I want to see. This spirit of inquiry is most important. If I sit down for my meditation, Om, I am the immortal Atman. that is not discovery, is it? Huh? You have said it already. That's all. That's the end of meditation. Get up and go away. You can as well get up and go away. It's a waste of time to sit more. You know you are the immortal Atman. But then what do you want to do? What more do you want to do? Nothing. Yeah, you want to sit and affirm, I am the immortal Atman. You can go on affirming, I am the immortal Atman, I am the immortal Atman, I am the immortal Atman. I am the immortal Atman. I would like to have a cup of tea. Oh, I am the immortal Atman. Yeah. It's time for a cup of tea. It's time for a cup of tea. I am the immortal Atman. It would have been easier, more profitable to get going and make a cup of tea and drink it. It's at least it tastes nice. I am the immortal Atman doesn't taste nice. So, here, the spirit of discovery is important. I have a very crude analogy. A very crude analogy, and you must forgive me for that. But I believe it expresses what I have in mind aptly, most aptly. You know, the Fiji Islands and in somewhere else too, there are islands which are uninhabited, totally uninhabited. Small islands which there's nobody. I believe there are about 200 or 300 islands around Fiji, and many of them are totally uninhabited. Imagine a green and lovely island. A couple, you know, adventurous couple, young couple, they take a small boat, go towards this island. Suddenly a storm develops, their boat is wrecked. They go on to the island, they stay there for a few days, and then something happens. The man is killed. The girl was expecting a baby. She gives birth to the baby. It is another girl. And the mother also dies. All hypothetical. So that this little girl is left on the island all alone. Somehow, miraculously, the girl survives, grows up. She obviously doesn't know what her name is. She doesn't need a name. She grows up eating these grass or whatever is available there. And then she is about 17, 18, when another adventurous young man rows in a boat, calls on this island, sees this beautiful girl, young girl, young lady, falls in love with her. I mean, she couldn't communicate, she couldn't talk. And then finds that I'm not going to take this morono home with me. You know, she's beautiful, you know, physically attractive. So, well, I spent a couple of days with her. And that's enough. And so he goes off. Up to this. And he doesn't teach her anything at all. She doesn't know anything, what happened. Then, when this man is gone, suddenly this young lady says, "Wait, what's happening? Something is happening here." Something is happening to me. That's the only thing she knows. She only knows that something is happening, and there is a sudden swelling, which is not sudden swelling of her abdomen, which doesn't seem to be sickness, because she's quite healthy. Now, she's looking at herself, curious, puzzled, and expecting. She wants to discover, what is this? What is this going to happen? It's swelling fast. What is going to come out of this? She doesn't know anything. She doesn't know boy or girl. Boy or girl is beside the point. She doesn't even know whether it is going to be a stone or a plant or an animal or a bird. She only knows that there is something inside which is moving. There is this state of expectancy without a preconceived notion of what will be the outcome. That is the spirit of inquiry. Not sitting and saying, "I am the immortal Atman." Then you are sunk. Then you will be wedded to that knowledge of the "I am the immortal Atman" without ever discovering the immortal Atman. You are affirming already. You are saying something which you don't know, and therefore you will never know it. If I am saying, "I am the immortal Atman," when I do not know that I am the immortal Atman, I will never know that I am the immortal Atman. I'll only keep projecting this, my image of whatever the immortal Atman is, and I will never get at the real knowledge or truth. So in the spirit of inquiry, one merely looks within in a spirit of bewilderment, wonderment, and expectancy. Pure expectancy. Pure expectancy. The spirit of discovery is there. Something is there in me. Something is happening. I'll give you one more exercise in meditation before we start. Part of what we have been discussing may be a bit difficult for those who are not endowed with already a highly developed concentration, because it needs a total single track mind. A total single track mind. And also probably it needs a lot of external favorable conditions too. Quiet, a calm place where there are no disturbances, where our basic needs are provided without having to bother about them, and so on. But now I'll give you, therefore, as a preliminary to this, one exercise which is of two parts. This can be practiced wherever we are, and the more disturbed the conditions, the better. The more disturbed the condition, the better. The smog and in the smoke and whatever nonsense there is. Take anything. Funny, wasn't it? Now, I look at this. I'm only looking at this. What has happened now? I am able to see this. I am like that girl on the solitary island. I don't know what this is. And I am seeing this. Then, when I see this, what exactly happens? Light falls on this, and the light waves or the vibrations reach my eyeballs. And these stimuli are conveyed to the brain. Is it clear? One set of stimuli falling on this is conveyed to the brain. Then, through the fingertips, another set of stimuli is conveyed to another part of the brain. Never mind, maybe the same part, maybe other parts. And then, the sound waves, another set of stimuli again, are conveyed through the ear to the brain. Is it clear? One set of stimuli here, one set of stimuli there, and one set of stimuli here. Then suddenly somewhere it says, wooden flooring, wooden tile. Now, can you, during your meditation, take any object you like, it doesn't matter what it is. I only gave you a crude illustration. Take anything, just you can do this. Or say your own material. The feeling is there, the sight is there. What gives birth to the word, my cloth? Where is that word formed? I am looking at this. Where is the word formed? A lady. In other words, where are all these sensations, sense stimuli? Where are they coordinated and formed into a thought? In other words, where is a thought born at all? Where? Not how. I don't care how. I am not interested in all the subconscious, unconscious, superconscious. If it is unconscious, how do you know it is unconscious? It's obviously conscious because you know it. The psychologist or whoever it is, somebody knows it. So it's not unconscious. We are not interested in all those academics. We are interested in the fact. Here it is. I am seeing this. And immediately the thought arises in me, it's a lady. I want to know, where does that thought, a lady, arise in me? Because if I am able to fix that, see that, discover that, then I can even discover where the I thought arises. Because I also is an idea. The watch is an idea. The eye is also an idea. The self also is an idea. As an extension of this, this is the most difficult part. As an extension of this is after this thought has been generated, then it comes down somewhere else to the heart. Let's say, she's a charming lady. She's my friend. Now the emotion is stirred. Therefore, there are two conversions. All the sense stimuli being converted into a thought, and the thought is converted into a feeling. Can we discover this mystery within ourselves? If I can discover this mystery of the birth of a thought and the birth of a feeling, then I am well on my way to the discovery of the self or its non-existence. When the self or its non-existence is discovered, then the ghost of fear, anxiety, unhappiness is laid once for all. Let us try. Please, any thought might arise in the mind, try to trace it to its own source. Where does it arise? Where? ॐ त्र्यम्बकं यजामहे सुगन्धिं पुष्टिवर्धनं गुर्वारुकमिव वन्दनान् मृत्योर्मुक्षये मामृतान् ॐ त्र्यम्बकं यजामहे सुगन्धिं पुष्टिवर्धनं गुर्वारुकमिव वन्दनान् मृत्योर्मुक्षये मामृतान् ॐ त्र्यम्बकं यजामहे सुगन्धिं पुष्टिवर्धनं गुर्वारुकमिव वन्दनान् मृत्योर्मुक्षये मामृतात् सर्वेषां स्वस्ति भवतु सर्वेषां शान्तिर्भवतु सर्वेषां पूर्णं भवतु सर्वेषां मङ्गलं भवतु सर्वे भवन्तु सुखिनः सर्वे सन्तु निरामया सर्वे भद्राणि पश्यन्तु मा कश्चित् दुःखभाग् भवेत् असतो मा सद्गमय तमसो मा ज्योतिर्गमय मृत्योर्मामृतं गमय ॐ पूर्णमदः पूर्णमिदं पूर्णात् पूर्णमुदच्यते पूर्णस्य पूर्णमादाय पूर्णमेवावशिष्यते ॐ शान्तिः शान्तिः।